So I'm also not Jewish. So now I'm totally dependent on your mercy. It's not acceptable. That is true. Hare Krishna. Na kuryat karichit sangam. Tamas. Tivram titirishu. Dharmatmakam mokshanam. Yadadyanta vigyatakam. Kuryat karichit sangam. Tamasti vram titirishu. Dharmatma kama mokshanam. Yadadyanta vigyatakam. Kuryat karichit sangam. Tamasti vram titirishu. Dharmatma kama mokshanam. Yadadyanta vigyatakam. Do not. Kuryat. Act. Karichit. At any time. Sangam. Association. Tama. Ignorance. Tivram. With great speed. Titirishu. Persons who desire to cross over nations. Dharma. Religion. Artha, economic development. Kama, sense gratification. Mokshanam, of salvation. Yat, that which. Atyanta, very much. Vigatakam, obstruction or stumbling block. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nations must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. Report. The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses, to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily. But such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, but prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat, or milk because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge in the shastras, and if we live a regulated life under the direction of shastras and guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will be able to go forward to liberation. The translation again. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. Nakuriyat karajit sangam tamas tidram tittirishu dharmatma kama mokshanam yad atyanta vigatakam. Hare Krishna. This verse includes the four principles, Prabhupada describes them, the four principles of life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Human civilization, actual human civilization, or civilization period, there is also uncivilized human life. But civilized human life is based on these four principles. Dharma, religion, or religiosity. Artha, economic development. Kama, the gratification of our senses. And finally, freedom, liberation, moksha. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing how the Vedic formula for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha is arranged in such a way that one can simultaneously enjoy material life and obtain freedom from material attachment. This is somewhat of a perplexing notion. How can we at the same time enjoy this world and yet become free from our attachment to this world? The description, moksha, liberation, what is described here as freedom from attachment to the world. It is our attachment to this world which keeps us within the material world. So, the formula being suggested here is not to cease sensual activity. The previous verse, which I did a little preparation for, speaks of shunyavadi, shunya. So the principle of shunya, Prabhupada refers to this many times. He talks about how the shunyavadis, they think that this material enjoyment is the cause of suffering. You know the Buddha. What did he speak of? What was his realization? What did he realize sitting under the Bodhi tree and so on? Desire is the cause of suffering. That as soon as we desire, and in this material world, we are bound to suffer. So, the solution? End desire. End sensual activity. Make all void. Nothing. So Srila Prabhupada often comments on this. He gives the example, most of you must have heard this, of the sick man, the sick person who, especially the jaundiced person, whatever food he takes. How many of you have recently had any sort of, I don't know, I had a big feast the other day, and the thought of any food, after eating so much and then having little indigestion and this and that, then you'd look at some more food and say, oh no, I don't want any more food. So this is the thinking of the sunyavadi thinking, that because material enjoyment is giving me suffering, let me give it all up, let me end my material sensual activity. Then I can become free. But what Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here, how he's describing liberation, is freedom from attachment to sensual activity. So the formula of the Vedic life is not to eliminate sense gratification, sensual activity, but to reform that by religious principles. That's why the formula begins with dharma. The whole formula begins with dharma. Based on dharma comes artha. This is the first necessary step if you want to have sense gratification, which will lead to liberation. You have to have proper dharma and proper artha. If your artha is without dharma, your kama will not lead to moksha. So the examples, several examples are given here of people engaged in artha, economic development, without dharma. Like the butcher is the example that Prabhupada gives. He is engaged in artha. What does Prabhupada say? He says, for instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily. So they're artha, they're doing their artha. But because their artha is without any dharma, in fact it is against dharma, rather than leading the enjoyment that they have from their money and how they spend it, will never lead to anything, any freedom. So first there must be dharma, and our artha must have connection to dharma. This is the Varnashrama formula. One should work according to dharma. One, you may ask, sometimes the question comes, well, what is the difference between Varnashrama and regular, ordinary society? In every society, there are divisions of work. There are those who are engaged as in intellectual teaching capacities and so on. There are those who are engaged in administrative or military activities. There are those who are engaged in economic development, and there are those who are assisting. There, all these divisions of work are there in every active human, organized human society. They're there. So what is the difference? Artha is going on. Varnas, or you could call them varnas or different divisions, they're all going on. But because the dharma is missing, it is not leading to the actual goal. Varnashrama means when dharma is there. Varnashrama charvata vishnurararanam. The distinction is when Vishnu is worshipped through our artha, through our economic activity, and even in our sense gratification. Even in our sense gratification, when our material activities are engaged in Vishnu Aradhana, in the worship of Vishnu, in the worship of Krishna. So we have to look very carefully at our artha and our kama, and see how it is supported by dharma. Prabhupada is not asking us to give up artha and kama. In fact, he says it's impossible. It is not possible to become completely free from these things. We must have artha and kama in this life. But how do we base our artha and kama on dharma? We have to understand the principles of dharma. So the first principle in our community particularly that we have to, well, there are many principles that we have to develop in terms of making our artha and kama founded on dharma. In this regard, I'll give one story that has inspired me, I've probably told this many times here, when I first came to Srimaya Pradham, not the first time I came here, but when I came here to stay, I didn't come here to stay, I should say, when I came here and ended up staying, that was 1976. So I was serving at the time in New York. And I was, at that time, I was acting president until Madhavisa arrived. So we had this arrangement that I would go ahead before the festival so that the rest of the devotees could come during the festival, and I would go back to see that the temple was taken care of. So I came, and at that time, there were very few people. Pankajanra, you may remember, and Janani Vas. This was 76, and Guru Kripa's Namhat party were doing everything because there was very few devotees. So I ended up with some service, and by the end of the festival, they wanted me to stay. So we went to, Madhavisa didn't know what to say, so he said, we have to ask Srila Prabhupada. So we went to his room, and my memory is a little vague, but as I remember it, he was commenting about the state of Indian society in some negative way. Some news must have come or something in which he was just, this place. And he made this comment that we cannot expect the whole world to become Krishna conscious. But there must be one ideal place. And I understood him to refer to this place, this our Mayapur community, our project. We must become an ideal community. Why are we here? Why did he create this place? There are many reasons he created the Mayapur project. But on the top of the list is that we should show an ideal example of how to live, how to enjoy in Krishna consciousness. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, he describes that the mission of Mayapur is to have a constant festival. There should be a constant festival of Sri Harinam Sankirtan. That's the mission of our project. Because by having a constant festival of the holy name, we can enjoy in all respects, all our kama is fulfilled. We dance, we sing, we play music, and we eat. The other day, I don't know, the Harinam party that goes around, I could see that they were playing and someone had a bass guitar. I don't know if that person is here. I didn't recognize him. But anyway, the bass adds a little something to it. And so all the young people, they were just dancing. And you could see they were just enjoying themselves with the Hare Krishna mantra. So this is, we're trying to show that you can enjoy, yes. Not that you have to go to the forest and give up everything and just sit down, sunyavadi, austere type of life. No. Enjoy. Enjoy Krishna consciousness by chanting and dancing and feasting and worshipping Krishna. This is what we have to show people. This is what we have to demonstrate. And we must demonstrate along with this, so important, and this way we're getting there with the chanting and dancing and feasting. I think we're doing not too badly in that respect. But in terms of our artha, we have a long ways to go. How many of us here are able to engage to fulfill our economic needs in a way which is truly dharmic, in which not only the work, the result of the work is satisfying to Krishna, we can make some money and then offer that to Krishna, but that the work itself is pleasing to Krishna. That our very work, the work that we do, that to make our money or whatever you have to do, is pleasing to Krishna. That is should be our goal. That we can, unfortunately, I'm just coming back here after some time, and I can't say this for sure, but I know that at least in the past, many of our members here were not able to earn their livelihood here in Sri Mayapur Dham. Would have to go out to some country to sell, you know, to work in some way to make some money so that they can live here. So this we have to work at. We should be able to show an ideal example of not only how to enjoy the kama, but also how to perform our artha. Our artha should also be very well founded. And the fundamental principle of that artha is to protect the cows. That has to be at the basis of our artha activity. If our artha does not involve cow protection, the protection of the cows in our community, and that includes, I should say, not just the cows living in our goshala here, but the cows that are living nearby and that supply the milk to our community, they also must be protected. In this regard, it's interesting to note the context of what we are reading. And this is throughout the Bhagavatam we find this, that the various instructions, generally, who's being taught? Some sage is speaking and so on. Who's, most of the time, who's listening?
A king.
Some king is listening. Here it is Prithu. There is Rahugana, there is so many. The kings are listening. And what are the kings doing with this knowledge? They're doing two things. Like Rishabhdev is hearing and listening and also instructing and renouncing the world. But Prithu, he is maintaining this world. He is protecting this world. So it's interesting to note how the instructions of the sages are being delivered to the kings. And the kings, what do they do with this? What did Arjuna do hearing the Gita? Did he go off and go to Vrindavan to chant and do bhajan? He applied, and that was the, again, prepared. The last verse was what? Vigyan. He applied the knowledge that he was receiving in devotional service. So we are also receiving so many instructions here. We must apply them practically in our lives, in every aspect of our lives. That includes our economic activities. Somehow, it is not easy, because we are living in a society which is so far removed from the principles of dharma in material activity, in artha. It is very difficult to actually establish oneself and perform devotional service, to apply the full commands of our dharma in our Artha activities is challenging. But this is the challenge that we, especially here in Shrimaya Pradham, as a community, we must begin to address more and more, so that we can then represent the ideal, how to live, how to work, how to enjoy, and ultimately how to become free. How by working, how by living, how by working, how by enjoying, we end up not at our deathbed lamenting, oh, I could have done this, I could, oh, where is this going? Oh, I'm losing it. But seeing our progress, our doors opening in front of us to freedom and eternal, blissful life, eternal, blissful life with Sri Krishna in his service. That door is there, it's opening, it's waiting for us. These are the steps outlined for us. How to go progressively, step by step, to that door. The gift we have received and the gift we have to give others. So I will end there and ask for you to please give your comments on this topic as well as any questions. Yes, Rishabh.
Pancharatna Prabhu Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purport that to earn money according to one's position in society is legitimate. That's the first sentence.
Yes.
The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, etc. Why do we still have this idea in ISKCON that if we're doing devotional service, there can't be any exchange or else it's not devotional service? I'm not talking just about money, but, you know, there's an idea somewhere in the head that if I'm getting something in return, if I'm maintaining myself even, that that's not devotional service. Could you comment on that?
Hare Krishna. The business of earning money, receiving, getting paid for your work. There's two ways people earn money. They sell their labor, or they sell their things. Or they're capitalists and they do other things. They organize materials and labor, and they get their money from that. Now, in your example, I think what you're specifically referring to is the first one, where we're selling our time, when we're selling our physical labor. And we're expected often, as you I was saying, that it's expected in a society of devotees that all the devotees should volunteer their time and labor and sell their time and labor somewhere else, in some other place for their... But whenever they give their time and their labor, at any circumstance, they should volunteer, they should donate their time and labor. Which means that what the end result of that expectation is that we find that most, well, at least in as I've seen it in the West, most devotees They have only a little bit of time to volunteer because they need to sell the rest of their time. So the question is, if I've understood it, why not give those devotees, why not compensate them for their, for at least some of their time, so that they can contribute their time to the mission of Krishna consciousness? Why not do this? There are a few arguments why not. The first argument is that it brings about a kind of materialistic relationship that between the society and its members. If the members are earning money from the society, they may become, they may develop a materialistic relationship in which the money becomes more important than the service. So there's an argument that if we compensate devotees for their work, then it will end up into being some sort of mundane exchange, and the spirit of devotion will be lost. Another objection is that, where is that money going to come from? Where does that money come from? If the money is coming from donations from the public, who expect it to be goes purely into some, you know, specific thing, they may be upset if they understand that their money is being used to pay somebody. So therefore, that should be avoided. On the other hand, we find that in many situations, devotees are engaged fully in service, and they're compensated in kind. They're given a house to live in, they're given prasadam to eat, they're given some allowance, and so on, and they're maintained. So what is the difference? I don't know the answer. It's very complicated. And on the other hand, I would say that we are a work in progress. And we will need to learn, as we develop into a broader and larger community and society, how to have these economic relationships. A godbrother of ours, Dhaneshwara Prabhu, is in favor of what he calls the gift economy, in which we would be living together as a community, and we would be exchanging our goods, the goods and services that we need to exist, fully as gifts. You need some help? Okay, I'll help you. I need some help? You help me. You grow something, some food, and you give it to everybody. I bang nails, and I bang nails for everybody. And everybody just does what they do as a gift to each other. This is called a gift economy. Then there's what are called barter economies, where, okay, I trade you. I'll do something for you, you do something for me, and you don't use any money. So figuring out, finding our economic relationships, our artha. You notice in my class, I was talking about how we have to achieve an ideal, but I didn't actually say how we're going to do it tonight. Because I don't know. I don't know. I just know we have to do it. We've got to figure it out. And it's going to take time. And it's going to be experimental. And it's going to take thinking. And it may never ever be perfect, but at least we have to make the endeavor, you know, towards those ideals. For example, in the I keep talking about cows. I think it starts there. For me, it starts with how we relate to the cows. If we can get that taken care of, that will help us lead to how we develop our other economic relationships and so on. And my personal feeling is going to become, there'll be hybrids and mixes where somebody is, for example, in the nonprofit world. It's understood that anyone working in the nonprofit world should accept a salary which is 30 to 40% lower than he would get if he were working in the for-profit world. So, in other words, a devotee who's working in ISKCON getting some salary for their maintenance should be, of the mood, should have the mood and have the idea that let me take what I need to maintain myself and my family and, to have, as Prabhupada describes here, to earn money according to one's position in society. Let me do that, but let my position in society be a servant. See, in one sense, this is, I think, perhaps a clue to what you're describing. That in terms of a varnashrama arrangement, you could say, in our community, our varna might really be, economically speaking, it's either Brahmin, you just take whatever is accepted, or it's a sutra. You work and you accept what you need. And both are, in Vaishnava terms, are very elevated. Though in economic terms, they may not be. So it may be that, all right, we don't want people exploiting our economic power. But at the same time, so it's a work in progress. Does that, you have the answer. Come on, tell us.
So no, next time you prepare a class, you didn't prepare a class. No. So next time you give class, you have to prepare and tell us the answer.
Okay. Give me a few years. Yes.
Thank you.
Somebody's come to the point where they're only interested in moksha. Both Kama and Artha is he just doesn't care anymore. Then, if somebody's only interested in moksha, if that's the only thing that interests him, then is Artha and Karma necessary at all, in your opinion?
Dharma, of course, is always necessary for everything. You can never be free of dharma. Of course, in a sometimes dharma becomes a little, flexible as our devotion for Krishna arises. Certainly, kama, some kinds of kama are never disappear as long as we have a body. As long as the body is there, there will be some forms of kama. Although we're not interested in it, we have to eat, we have ears to hear, we have eyes to see. Something is going to be in front of our senses. Our senses will interact. So we have to, and the senses are, regardless of our inner desire, the senses often have their own way of being full. So we still have to be concerned about how that our senses are properly engaged, even if our only desire within us is to be free. We still have to look out, because the senses need to be engaged. Then, for the senses to be engaged and the body to be maintained, some living has to be there. So that should also be arranged in according to dharma. So for one whose full internal desire is simply for Krishna consciousness, then the best form of artha, as I've understood it, is that of the beggar, the one who madhukari. You don't do anything. You're madhukari is meant for such persons. You accept whatever comes. Whatever comes to you, that you accept. That is your you go to the prasadam hall when the prasadam is there. You don't demand that it arrives on your doorstep, that somebody has to bring it to you. Those who are performing madhukari, they don't demand that everyone, all the people giving, they come to their place and give them food. They go door to door to accept something. So they perform some, that's their kind of artha. They don't, in a humble mood, it was Raghunathas who went to who took the rice from the Jagannath, the rejected rice. He went to get it. So there's some artas there, some, but it's just minimum. Any other? Yes.
At the beginning of the talk, you mentioned that we have a base how to develop Dharma and Dharma. And you were, it seemed to me that you were going to say several
points. No, as 1, 2, 3. You said first, but then you start talking about other things. And later on you mentioned that you don't have the key. But it seems to me that you may have some idea.
Well, I was saying first principles of Dharma. That I did talk about the one that the first principle that Krishna, that Bhagavatam gives us is Varnashram Acharavata Vishnu Raravana. That the first principle of Dharma in our understanding, because our goal is Krishna consciousness. Our goal is not liberation in some impersonal way. Our goal is Krishna. So therefore, our dharma, our first principle, is the satisfaction of Krishna. That's the first principle. Then beyond that, there are many, many other principles of regulation, restriction. And I believe that protecting the cows is the next principle in terms of dharma. In terms of dharmic activity in artha. That if our artha is in some way not supporting the cows in our community, but in fact in some way neglecting them. Therefore, if we use, this is why using tractors to grow our food is, you know, these are the type of things that we have to get beyond. If we really want to have the kind of dharma that leads to the kind of artha, that leads to the kind of kama, that leads to the moksha that we are after. In these terms. Of course, we have a short circuit, we have a shortcut path. Harinam Sankirtan. Harinam Sankirtan takes us straight all the way. Regardless of how perfectly or imperfectly we can perform dharma, artha, and kama. If we clearly take the path of Harinam, then everything is taken care of. But that doesn't mean that, you know, what, that we then say, well, we don't care about Dharma, Artha, Kama. Because we have it. We still have to adjust our Dharma, Artha, and Kama as we live in this world, as far as possible. But still, because of the mercy of Mahaprabhu, we have Harinam. And through Harinam, we are guaranteed. Hare Krishna. Oh, yes.
Talking about karma, I was in Haridwar and somebody told me about
karma, if something very bad happened to me in this life, that means, of course I know that, that means that I have done it to somebody before, so I have to pay. Now he told me, as long as you live and you are not liberated, it will go on. So suppose I hurt somebody, somebody hurt me in this life, in a terrible way. Then the conclusion is, I have hurt that person before in another life. So next life, when I die, I'm going to hurt him. And then when I die, he's going to hurt me again. And then again, I'm going to hurt him. And
anan.
It will. Is it true that it will go on? It will go.
That's why it's called anadi.
It will go on till I am liberated. Till
it will go on.
Completely liberated by Krishna. Or
caught up, samsara.
How long will this? Is it true? How long will this
go on? It's anadi. It's beginningless. It's endless. There's no beginning. There's no end.
Till you are liberated, you have
free.
To go through this.
You're going to go up and down. Abrahmana, Bhuvana, Loka, Punara, Vartana, Arjuna. Up and down, 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 up and down. No end. No beginning, no end. Nitya Bada. Not a good prospect. Harina!
So, it seemed from, I forget the devotee's name who had asked the question prior.
Sureshvara.
In terms of the answer or not, it seems even from the verse, it describes through Dharma, what is the Dharma, like Sanatana Dharma, what is the nature of a particular thing, and then how does it interact? Like we understand, as you pointed out, the Dharma of Vaishya is cow protection. And so it seems it's actually not so mysterious. Krishna has provided us with all the answers. Srila Prabhupada, like Srila Prabhupada got into further elaboration, like a brahmana, if he received a salary, is a sudra, he's not a brahmana. And so in terms of getting compensation, it depends on what your type of activity is. It seems the crux of the situation is not having the information what to do, but the willingness to actually take that whatever inconvenience to actually represent it, or to utilize it, as you had said, to actually utilize it. And just as Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, now I've told you everything. Now do as you like. And I certainly, growing up in the Krishna consciousness movement, I grew up with a sense there's a right and a wrong, the thing you should do and the thing you shouldn't do. And I was shocked, actually, when I read that verse. We have a choice? And ultimately, we are making that choice. But somehow, our culture seems still to be like there's some... Srila Prabhupada's instruction to show your love for me for how well you can cooperate together. But instead of like an authority-based interaction, a cooperation-based society. But it seems it's already, all the answers are there. That's what's so beautiful about Krishna consciousness. And perhaps as you're saying, Harinam, as we purify the heart, then we're willing to actually accept Krishna's, I think in the Hare Krishna explosion, there's one very nice statement of Srila Prabhupada, where he says, Krishna consciousness means simply you must agree with Krishna. And so anyhow, that was just something I thought would be nice to consider.
It's true. It's simple for the simple. But unfortunately, most of us are not very simple. And therefore, we have to figure it out for ourselves. Just where things come together, how it all fits together. And... I think it will become simpler and simpler as as our community gets simpler and simpler. Many of us, you know, we come to Krishna consciousness, we come to devotional service, but we have family, we have this, that, we have all kinds of other things that are, and we're still got one foot in the process of Krishna consciousness and another foot in the regular material society, and how to work all that out, that's what becomes complicated. And yeah, the information is there, but the jnana, the vijnana, the practical application in our specific circumstances, that takes some work. But the problem is when we don't work on it. When we think that, oh, it's very difficult, it's challenging, because I don't say that it's not, I wouldn't agree that it's just all there, it's simple, we just have to do it. I don't accept that, because I've looked at it, and it's not so simple that you just do it. There's so many considerations and issues, that, because you're talking about people. You're talking about lots and lots of people. I'm not talking about just one person. We're talking about here, it's a community of thousands. And if we really want to talk about it, we're talking about a community of 35 to 40,000 people living in this area. We can't have any sort of sustainable society in our little group. We don't have enough land, we don't have enough labor, we don't have any of these things. The only way that we're ever going to be really a sustainable society is we include 40 to 50, maybe 100,000 people have to be included in our program. And they've got all their interests and they've got their problems and they're not even Hindus. Many of them are Muslims. How do they fit into the whole picture? So it's not so, it's a challenge. But we have to do it. The problem is that when we think that it's too challenging and we stop working at it, then we're in trouble. But if we keep working at it, steadily working at it, keep going. This year I attended the GBC's strategic planning team meeting in Bombay. And this is, I think, the fifth year, or fourth or fifth year that we've met in Bombay. And the mood was, hey, we're still at this. We're still doing it. We didn't give up like we did 5 years ago or 10 years ago, because this is not the first time that they've attempted this. It's maybe the fifth time. But this time, they're at it, still at it. They're going at it. They're continuing. They keep going. Don't give up. Yes, it's a challenge. But we don't give up. We keep working at it. In every aspect of our life, our chanting, our internal life, we keep working at it. And as a community, we keep working at it. Yes, we have a problem. We something happens. But we don't give up. We keep going. And we will eventually realize what's simple. It appears, but it's getting from A to B, which is the challenge. So,
Your class on, when you were mentioning the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, it reminded me of a story that was related to me by a friend about a conversation between Krishna, Arjuna, Yudhisthira, and Bhima. And the question that was presented by Krishna was, you know, what is the most important of these four principles? You know, and Dharma was presented, and Artha was presented, and Kama was presented. And the result of the conversation was that actually Kama was the most important of all three, due to the fact that you can't perform your Dharma and you can't achieve Artha, and you can't even achieve Moksha without Kama, the desire to do those and to follow that path. And that was that, you know, we understand Kama as being enjoyment, but also it's the desire for enjoyment.
Yeah.
And liberation is not attainable without the desire for liberation. And so the most basic principle of our Krishna conscious movement is, you know, taking a prasadam and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra so that we can cultivate a desire to serve Krishna. Because without that desire, no matter how much encouragement is given, we won't create that mood of service. And then all of our activities will be for ourselves, not for Krishna.
And some would say, I think it's that without karma, we won't suffer. We won't suffer. And if we don't suffer, we won't want to be free. That's another way of looking at it. Hare Krishna. It's time is up. Hari Bol, thank you very much for being with me here.